Chapter 8. Lady Toad's Adventures.
When Toad found herself immured in a dark and noisome dungeon, and knew that all the grim darkness of a medieval fortress lay between her and the outer world of sunshine and well-metalled high roads where she had lately been so happy, disporting herself as if she had bought up every road in England, she flung herself at full length on the floor and shed bitter tears, and abandoned herself to dark despair.
"It's the end of everything,"
she said.
"At least it is the end of the career of Lady Toad, which is the same thing. The fair and glamorous Lady Toad. The rich and hospitable Lady Toad. Lady Toad, so free and careless and captivating. Oh, how can I hope to be ever set at large again?"
she said.
"Who have been imprisoned so justly for stealing so handsome a motor car in such an audacious manner, and for such lurid and imaginative cheek bestowed upon such a number of churlish red-faced policemen."
Here her sobs choked her.
"Oh, stupid animal that I was,"
she said.
"Now I must languish in this dungeon, till people who were proud to say they knew me have forgotten the very name of Lady Toad. Oh, wise old badger,"
she said.
"Oh, clever, intelligent rat, and sensible mole. What sound judgments, what a knowledge of men and matters you possess. Oh, unhappy and forsaken Toad."
With lamentations such as these, she passed her days and nights for several weeks, refusing her meals or intermediate light refreshments, though the grim and ancient jailer, knowing that Toad's pockets were well lined, frequently pointed out that many comforts, and indeed luxuries, could be, by arrangement, sent in, at a price, from outside. Now the jailer had a daughter, a pleasant lass and good-hearted, who assisted her father in the lighter duties of his post. She was particularly fond of animals, and besides her canary, whose cage hung on a nail in the massive wall of the keep by day, to the great annoyance of prisoners who relished an after-dinner nap, and was shrouded in an antimacassar on the parlour table at night, she kept several piebald mice and a restless, revolving squirrel. This kind-hearted girl, pitying the misery of Toad, said to her father one day,
"Father, I can't bear to see that poor beast so unhappy and getting so thin. You let me have the managing of her. You know how fond of animals I am. I'll make her eat from my hand and sit up and do all sorts of things."
Her father replied that she could do what she liked with her. He was tired of Toad, and her sulks, and her airs, and her meanness. So that day, the girl went on her errand of mercy and knocked at the door of Toad's cell.
"Now, cheer up, Toad,"
she said, coaxingly, on entering.
"And sit up and dry your eyes and be a sensible animal, and do try and eat a bit of dinner. See? I've brought you some of mine, hot from the oven."
It was bubble and squeak between two plates, and its fragrance filled the narrow cell. The penetrating smell of cabbage reached the nose of Toad as she lay prostrate in her misery on the floor, and gave her the idea for a moment that perhaps life was not such a blank and desperate thing as she had imagined. But she wailed and kicked with her legs and refused to be comforted. So the wise girl retired for the time, but, of course, a good deal of the smell of hot cabbage remained behind, as it will do, and Toad, between her sobs, sniffed and reflected, and gradually began to think new and inspiring thoughts of pageantry and poetry and deeds still to be done, of broad meadows and cattle browsing in them, raked by sun and wind, of kitchen gardens and straight herb borders and warm snapdragon beset by bees, and of the comforting clink of dishes set down on the table at Toad Hall, and the scrape of chair legs on the floor as everyone pulled herself close up to her work. The air of the narrow cell took a rosy tinge. She began to think of her friends, and how they would surely be able to do something. Of lawyers, and how they would have enjoyed her case, and what an ass she had been not to get in a few. And lastly, she thought of her own great cleverness and resource, and all that she was capable of if she only gave her great mind to it. And the cure was almost complete. When the girl returned, some hours later, she carried a tray with a cup of fragrant tea steaming on it and a plate piled up with very hot buttered toast, cut thick, very brown on both sides, with the butter running through the holes in it in great golden drops, like honey from the honeycomb. The smell of that buttered toast simply talked to Toad, and with no uncertain voice, talked of warm kitchens, of breakfasts on bright frosty mornings, of cosy parlour firesides on winter evenings, when one's ramble was over and slippered feet were propped on the fender, of the purring of contented cats and the twitter of sleepy canaries. Toad sat up on end once more, dried her eyes, sipped her tea and munched her toast, and soon began talking freely about herself and the house she lived in and her doings there and how important she was and what a lot her friends thought of her. The jailer's daughter saw that the topic was doing her as much good as the tea, as indeed it was, and encouraged her to go on.
"Tell me about Toad Hall," she said. "It sounds beautiful."
"Toad Hall,"
said Toad proudly.
"An eligible self-contained lady's residence, very unique, dating in part from the 14th century but replete with every modern convenience. Up-to-date sanitation, 5 minutes from church, post office and golf links. Suitable for all local schools."
"Bless the animal," said the girl, laughing. "I don't want to take it. Tell me something real about it. But first, wait till I fetch you some more tea and toast."
She tripped away and presently returned with a fresh trayful. And Toad, pitching into the toast with avidity, her spirits quite restored to their usual level, told her about the boathouse, and the fish pond, and the old walled kitchen garden, and about the pigsties, and the stables, and the pigeon house, and the hen house, and about the dairy, and the wash house, and the china cupboards, and the linen presses, and about the banqueting hall, and the fun they had there when the other animals were gathered round the table and Toad was at her best, singing songs, telling stories, carrying on generally. Then the jailer's daughter wanted to know about her animal lady friends and was especially interested in all she had to tell her about them and how independently they lived and what they did to pass their time. Of course, she did not say she was fond of animals as pets, because she had the sense to see that Toad would be extremely offended. When she said goodnight, having filled her water jug and shaken up her straw for her, Toad was very much the same sanguine, self-satisfied animal that she had been of old. She sang a little song or two, of the sort she used to sing at her dinner parties, curled herself up in the straw, and had an excellent night's rest and the pleasantest of dreams. They had many interesting talks together after that as the dreary days went on, and the jailer's daughter grew very sorry for Toad and thought it a great shame that a poor little animal should be locked up in prison for what seemed to her a very trivial offence. Toad, of course, in her vanity, thought that the girl's interest in her proceeded from great admiration, and she went so far as to feel a touch of guilt for having bewitched the poor creature with tales of her varied and fashionable mode of life. One morning, the girl was very broody and answered at random and did not seem to Toad to be paying proper attention to her witty sayings and sparkling comments.
"Toad,"
she said presently,
Just listen, please. I have an aunt who is a washerwoman.
Oh, there, there, said Toad graciously.
Never mind, think no more about it. I have several aunts who ought to be washerwomen.
Do be quiet a minute, Toad,
said the girl.
You talk too much, that's your chief fault, and I'm trying to think, and you hurt my head. As I said, I have an aunt who is a washerwoman. She does the washing for all the prisoners and guards in this castle. We tried to keep any paying business of that sort in the family, you understand. She takes out the washing on Monday morning and brings it in on Friday evening. This is a Thursday. Now, this is what occurs to me. You're very rich, at least you're always telling me so. And she's very poor. A few pounds wouldn't make any difference to you, and it would mean a lot to her. Now, I think if she were properly approached, squared, I believe is the word you animals use, the two of you could come to some arrangement by which she would let you have some of her garments, and you could escape from the castle in disguise.
Oh, but look here,
said Toad, in alarm.
You surely wouldn't have Lady Toad of Toad Hall, she who entered this dungeon in one of the finest tea gowns in Europe, depart in the borrowed rags of a washerwoman.
No, no, laughed the girl. You're not a bit like my aunt. She's as thin as a piece of straw, poor thing. What I mean is, she might be persuaded to give you the uniform of old turnkey, he being the only guard of your proportions. And in his tunic and breeches and so on, you could escape from the castle as the stoutest of the jailers. You're very alike in many respects, particularly about the figure.
Well, I doubt that,
said Toad in a huff.
I have a very desirable figure for what I am.
So has Turnkey, replied the girl, for what he is. But have it your own way, you horrid, proud, ungrateful animal, when I'm sorry for you and trying to help you. I suppose you want to go off in a coach and four.
Yes, yes, that's all right. Thank you very much indeed,
said Toad hurriedly.
Now that you put it more clearly, it's not such a terrible idea. The garb of a washerwoman simply wouldn't do, but a nice, smart uniform, now that's the ticket.
Honest Toad was always ready to admit herself in the wrong.
You are a dear, kind, clever girl,
she said.
And I am indeed a proud and stupid toad. Introduce me to your worthy aunt, if you will be so kind, and I have no doubt that the excellent lady and I will be able to arrange terms satisfactory to both parties.
Next evening, the girl ushered her aunt into Toad's cell, bearing her week's washing pinned up in a towel. The old lady had been prepared beforehand for the interview and had brought along a few extra items. The sight of certain gold sovereigns that Toad had thoughtfully placed on the table in full view practically completed the matter and left little further to discuss. In return for her cash, Toad received a brass-buttoned tunic, belt, breeches, and matching black cap with green trim.
Well, go on then, Toad,
said the girl.
Take off your prison smock.
Shaking with laughter, she helped Toad into the freshly pressed uniform and arranged the stiff-brimmed cap to sit well down over her face.
You're the very image of him,
she giggled.
Only I'm sure you never looked half so respectable in all your life before.
Oh. Now, goodbye, Toad, and good luck. Go straight down the way you came, and if anyone says anything to you, as they probably will, just remember that old Turnkey is frequently full to the knocker and very often missing from his post, so they will be used to your sneaking off. You can chaff back a bit, of course, but don't forget you're an old man, ill-mannered and over-friendly with the ladies, as I myself can attest. Go on, go! Oh, Toad.
With a quaking heart, but as firm a footstep as she could command, Toad set forth cautiously on what seemed to be a most harebrained and hazardous undertaking. But she was soon agreeably surprised to find how easy everything was made for her, and a little irritated at the thought that both her authority and the sex that seemed to inspire it were really another's. The guard's squat figure in its familiar uniform seemed a passport for every barred door and grim gateway. Even when Toad hesitated, uncertain as to the right turning to take, she found herself helped out of her difficulty by a laughing warder at the next gate, saying such things as,
"You've been at the drink again, turnkey?"
Or,
"Home to face the missus? Oh, I think you'll find she's that way."
Toad tried to respond with as much incoherence and as little wit as possible.
Is this the trut?
Indeed, the chaff and the humorous sallies to which she was subjected, and to which, of course, she had to provide prompt and effective reply, formed her chief danger. For Toad was an animal with a strong sense of her own dignity, and the chaff was mostly, she thought, poor and clumsy, and the humour of the sallies entirely lacking. However, she kept her temper, though with great difficulty, suited her retorts to her company and her supposed character, and did her best not to overstep the limits of bad taste. It seemed hours before she crossed the last courtyard, but at last she heard the wicket gate in the great outer door click behind her, felt the fresh air of the outer world upon her anxious brow, and knew that she was free. Dizzy with the easy success of her daring exploit, she walked quickly towards the lights of the town, not knowing in the least what she should do next, only quite certain of one thing, that she must remove herself as quickly as possible from the neighbourhood where the fellow she was forced to represent was such a recognisable figure. As she walked along, considering, her attention was caught by some red and green lights a little way off, to one side of the town, and the sound of the puffing and snorting of engines and the banging of shunted trucks fell on her ear.
Aha!
She thought.
Well, this is a piece of luck. A railway station is the thing I most want in the world at this moment, and what's more, I needn't go through town to get it, and I shan't have to support this humiliating character by repartees, which, though thoroughly effective, do not assist one's sense of self-respect.
She made her way to the station accordingly, consulted a timetable, and found that a train, bound more or less in the direction of her home, was due to start in half an hour.
More luck,
said Toad, her spirits rising rapidly, and went off to the booking office to buy her ticket. She gave the name of the station that she knew to be nearest to the village of which Toad Hall was the principal feature, and mechanically reached for the necessary money within her bosom. But here, the brass-buttoned tunic, which had nobly stood by her so far, and which she had quite forgotten, intervened and frustrated her efforts. In a sort of nightmare, she slid her paw between the buttons and struggled in various ways to reach inside her chemise, all the while doubting whether her secret store of cash had survived the daring transformation. Meanwhile, other travellers, forming up in a line behind, waited with impatience, making suggestions of more or less value and comments of more or less stringency and point. At last, somehow, she never rightly understood how, she delved deep enough within the folds to discover not only no money, but no way of retrieving her arm. In her misery, she made one desperate effort to carry the thing off, and, with a return to her fine old manner, and with the gesticulations of only one arm, she said,
"Oh, now look, old chap, I find I've left my money behind. Just be a good fellow and give me that ticket, will you? I'll send the money on tomorrow. I'm well known in these parts."
The clerk stared at her and the black prison warden cap, and then laughed.
"I should think you were pretty well known in these parts,"
he said,
"if you've tried this game on often. Here, stand away from the window, you fraudster. You're obstructing the other passengers."
An old gentleman who had been prodding her in the back for some moments here thrust her away and, what was worse, addressed her as a
"disgrace to a man in livery,"
which angered Toad more than anything that had occurred that evening. Baffled and full of despair, she wandered blindly down the platform where the train was standing, and tears trickled down each side of her nose. It was hard, she thought, to be within sight of safety and almost of home, and to be balked by the want of a few wretched shillings and by the pettifogging mistrustfulness of paid officials. Very soon her escape would be discovered. The hunt would be up. She would be caught, reviled, loaded with chains, dragged back again to prison, and bread and water and straw. Her guards and penalties would be doubled. And, oh, what sarcastic remarks the girl would make. What was to be done? She was not swift of foot. Her figure was unfortunately recognizable. Could she not squeeze under the seat of a carriage? She had seen this method adopted by schoolboys when the journey money provided by thoughtful parents had been diverted to other and better ends. As she pondered, she found herself opposite the engine, which was being oiled, wiped, and generally caressed by its affectionate driver, a burly man with an oil can in one hand and a lump of cotton waste in the other.
"Hello, sir,"
said the engine driver.
"What's the trouble? You don't look particularly cheerful."
"Oh, good sir,"
said Toad, in her deepest voice.
"I'm a poor unhappy guard. I've lost all my money. I can't pay for a ticket, and I must get home tonight somehow. Whatever am I to do, I don't know."
"That's a bad business indeed,"
said the engine driver, reflectively.
"Lost your money and can't get home. And got a wife too waiting for you, I dare say."
"Oh, and sick she is, yes,"
lamented Toad.
"And she'll be worrying and getting weaker and needing my help and so forth. Oh, dear, oh, dear."
"Well, I tell you what I'll do,"
said the good engine driver.
"Hop on, and I'll give you a ride on my engine. It's against company's regulations, but we're not so very particular in these out-of-the-way parts. We fellows in uniform must stick together."
Toad's misery turned into rapture as she eagerly scrambled up into the cab of the engine. The station agent waved his welcome flag, the engine driver whistled in cheerful response, and the train moved out of the station. As the speed increased and Toad could see on either side of her real fields and trees and hedges and cows and horses all flying past her, and as she thought how every minute was bringing her nearer to Toad Hall, and sympathetic friends, and money to chink in her purse, and a soft bed to sleep in, and good things to eat, and praise and admiration at the recital of her adventures and her surpassing cleverness, she began to skip up and down, and shout, and sing snatches of song, to the great astonishment of the engine driver, who had come across guards from the dungeon before, at long intervals, but never one at all like this. They had covered many and many a mile, and Toad was already considering what she would have for supper as soon as she got home, when she noticed that the engine driver, with a puzzled expression on his face, was leaning over the side of the engine and listening hard. Then she saw him climb onto the coals and gaze out over the top of the train. Then he returned and said to Toad,
"It's very strange. We're the last train running in this direction tonight. Yet I could be sworn that I heard another following us."
Toad ceased her frivolous antics at once. She became grave and depressed, and a dull pain in the lower part of her spine, communicating itself to her legs, made her want to sit down and try desperately not to think of all the possibilities. By the time the moon was shining brightly, and the engine driver, steadying himself on the coal, could command a view of the line behind them for a long distance. Presently, he called out,
"Oh, I can see it clearly now. It's an engine on our rails, coming along at a great pace. It looks as if we were being pursued."
The miserable Toad, crouching in the coal dust, tried hard to think of something to do, with dismal want of success.
"Oh, they're gaining on us fast,"
cried the engine driver.
"The engine is crowded with the queerest of people. Men like ancient warders waving halberds, policemen in their helmets waving truncheons, and shabbily dressed men in pot hats, obvious and unmistakable plainclothes detectives, even at this distance, waving revolvers and walking sticks, all waving and shouting the same thing. Stop! Stop! Stop!
Then Toad fell on her knees among the coals and, raising her clasped paws in supplication, cried,
Save me! Only save me, dear kind Mr. Engine Driver. I will confess everything. I am not the humble prison guard I seem to be. I have no wife waiting for me, sick or otherwise. I am a toad. A well-known and popular lady toad, a landed proprietor. I have just escaped, by my great daring and cleverness, from a loathsome dungeon in which my enemies had flung me. And if those fellows on that engine recapture me, it will be chains and bread and water and straw and misery once more for poor, unhappy, innocent Lady Toad.
The engine driver looked down upon her very sternly and said,
Now tell the truth. What were you put in prison for?
Well, it was nothing very much,
said poor Toad, colouring deeply.
I only borrowed a motor car while the owners were at lunch. They had no need of it at the time. I didn't mean to steal it, really. But people, especially magistrates, take such harsh views of thoughtless and high-spirited actions.
The engine driver looked very grave and said,
I fear that you have been indeed a wicked toad, and by rights I ought to give you up to offended justice. But you are evidently in sore trouble and distress, so I will not desert you. I don't hold with motor cars, for one thing, and I don't hold with being ordered about by policemen when I'm on my own engine for another. And the sight of any female in tears always makes me feel queer and soft-hearted. So cheer up, Lady Toad. I'll do my best, and we may beat them yet.
He piled on more coals, shoveling furiously. The furnace roared, the sparks flew, the engine leapt and swung, but still their pursuers slowly gained. The engine driver, with a sigh, removed his cap to wipe his brow with a handful of cotton waste and said,
I'm afraid it's no good. You see, they're running light, and they have the better engine. There's just one thing left for us to do, and it's your only chance, so attend very carefully to what I tell you. A short way ahead of us is a long tunnel, and on the other end of that, the line passes through a thick wood. Now, I will put on all the speed I can when we are running through the tunnel, but the other fellows will slow down a bit, naturally, for fear of an accident. When we are through, I will shut off steam and put on brakes as hard as I can. And the moment it's safe to do so, you must jump and hide in the woods before they get through the tunnel and see you. Then I will go full speed ahead again, and they can chase me if they like for as long as they like and as far as they like. Now, mind and be ready to jump when I tell you.
As he returned his cap to his head, the red trim and handsome crest caught the eye of Toad, and a mischievous thought occurred to her. He piled on more coals, and the train shot into the tunnel, and the engine rushed and roared and rattled. At last they shot out at the other end into the fresh air and the peaceful moonlight, and saw the wood lying dark and helpful upon either side of the line. The driver shut off the steam and put on brakes, and as the train slowed down to almost a walking pace, he cried out,
Now jump!
In one swift motion, Toad snatched the engine driver's cap from his head and jumped out of the train. She rolled down the short embankment, picked herself up unhurt, scrambled into the wood, and hid. Peeping out, she saw her train get up speed again and disappear at a great pace. Then, out of the tunnel, burst the pursuing engine, roaring and whistling, the motley crew waving their various weapons and shouting,
Stop! Stop! Stop!
When they were past, Toad had a hearty laugh for the first time since she was thrown into prison. Marvelling at her own cheek, she tossed old Turnkey's cap into the branches and replaced it with the engine driver's handsome grease cap. But she soon stopped laughing when she came to consider that it was now very late and dark and cold, and she was in an unknown wood with no money and no chance of supper, and still far from friends and home, and the dead silence of everything after the roar and rattle of the train was something of a shock. She dared not leave the shelter of the trees, so she struck into the wood with the idea of leaving the railway as far as possible behind her. After so many weeks within walls, she found the wood strange and unfriendly, and inclined, she thought, to make fun of her. Nightjars, sounding their mechanical rattle, made her think that the wood was full of searching warders closing in on her. An owl, swooping noiselessly towards her, brushed her shoulder with its wing, making her jump with the horrid certainty that it was a hand, then flitted off, moth-like, laughing its low hoo, 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 which Toad thought in very poor taste. Once she met a fox, who stopped, looked her up and down in a sarcastic sort of way, and said,
"Hello, train driver. Lost your train. Easy to lose track, I'm sure."
And swaggered off, sniggering. Toad looked about for a stone to throw at him, but could not succeed in finding one, which vexed her more than anything. At last, cold, hungry, and tired out, she sought the shelter of a hollow tree, where with branches and dead leaves she made herself as comfortable a bed as she could, and slept soundly till the morning.